We are. That's right. Welcome, everybody, to Common Ground Show. I guess we call it the Common Ground Show now, right, Sherry?
Sure.
I'm Steve Noskin. I have my co-host, Sherry Sauce. We have a fast-paced show coming aboard today.
Right? It's going to be crazy.
And we have some amazing guests, some really amazing guests today. And we're going to talk about racism and discrimination in America. And it's going to be a real doozy. I'm sure we have some real talented people here. But first, I just want to say, Sherry, the last show,
yes,
that was a pretty good show. We're getting really good reviews on that one. I mean, gosh, who would have thought 5G would command so much attention?
According to some, that was an open and shut discussion.
It was open and shut, but we have over 1,000 live views right now. That's growing every day, and that's pretty cool. And I think we were just recently put on a Facebook page in California, so that's going to increase that as well. This is our 13th show, lucky 13, and we've got Eric Hall, Lakshmi Tamala, Grace Wong, Sharesa Thomas, Sadav Haq, Ricardo Gloria, all in the house to talk about racism and discrimination in America. And, you know, really, does it exist? Does it exist? I mean, is it obvious that it exists? And I do want to apologize for people on our Facebook page who feel that they're not represented today. We did get comments.
Oh, my gosh.
From some Native Americans.
I can't.
Where's the Native American in the house? And
my family has a lot of Native American in it.
I mean, we're such a multicultural country. We could have had 80 people in this room, and we probably wouldn't have represented everybody. We did get some comments from the homosexual community. We're not represented, and I did get a comment from other religious groups, Sikhs, and there were women that said, why aren't we represented? We do have women here, right? So
yes,
we're okay with that. So you could have combination representation. But we do know that xenophobia and Islamophobia and homophobia does exist. We'd be fools to say that it doesn't. We're
absolutely
just going to discuss how it is in America today. And I'm going to leave it at that. We are sponsored real quick before we get into our commercials later in the show by Elevated Roofing. And Ricardo Gloria, who is here, does work for Elevated Roofing. I'm going to put him on the spot in a half hour. We also have Portia Plano, Bell and Sparrows, a new sponsor, and GetBloomly.com. So, to get this show going, because this show could actually go for 2 hours, let's just point to someone in the room, and we're going to get their perspective on, you know, the coming to America. If you've been here, if you're born here.
Are you going to introduce everybody?
I did that already.
Oh, okay.
Wake up, girl.
I'm doing stuff.
So I'm going to start with Sadak. Why don't you tell us a little about yourself and your background and your perspective on this topic?
Yeah, so born and raised here in New York. And lived my whole life. What?
My hometown.
Yes. And, you know, lived my whole life here. It wasn't until about 3 years ago. And, you know, I can't even say 9/11. Thankfully, I didn't feel the brunt of that or anything. I was busy in my studies and life was great. It wasn't until about 3 years ago. 4 years ago, I moved to Texas. And about 3 years ago, I started covering my head. Became more of an observant Muslim. Read the text and realized this is something that I want to do. And so, bam, now I'm visibly Muslim. And that's when I started experiencing overt racism, passive aggressive racism. There's many forms of racism,
right?
So it does exist. And, you know, everyone has a different experience of what they've said, what they've experienced, what they've listened to, what they've heard. And for me, I think it was more of just how people were so emboldened to be able to, you know, make passing comments or snide remarks or just facial expressions. And, you know, honestly, I always pray. I say, God, just don't take my smile away.
Oh,
because
that's a great perspective on life right there. Because really,
yes,
what are you supposed to do about it other than create hate or
the, respond
what,
in a negative way.
They're responding
way
to you in a way.
Yeah.
They're like tempting you to respond back in the same way. And that's a great attitude. In fact, on the research that I did, Pew Institute said that 83% of all Muslims in America feel that one way or another they've been discriminated.
Yeah.
Jews were at 64%. What I found really interesting was evangelists, who also are very outspoken about their religion, are actually discriminated almost 23%.
Yeah.
So religious discrimination does happen. But that's a great perspective that you bring. Do you want to add, like, how to...
Well, you know, one of the things that I was going to say is that, you know, when I feel like, okay, there's progress being made, bridges are being built. Just yesterday, I got an email from a woman who basically said that the church that she goes to, she's just been experiencing a lot of people who have been expressing Islamophobia to the extent that they won't go to Costco at certain times because they've realized that there's a little bit more Muslims that are frequenting Costco at those times.
I can't hear it.
It's just the ignorance that really bothers me. And it's also people not wanting to take that next step and to meet with a Muslim or with anyone. So, I mean, which is fine. Right. I will go out. I'll meet with you. I'll greet you with a smile. I'm totally fine.
Yeah, stereotypes, right? The less you know, I think we all can agree. Yes. That's what creates these stereotypes. If you don't know about someone.
Oh, look, Sheree's going on already.
If you don't really know about somebody or where they're from or what they're about, then this discrimination becomes, you know, in their own mind of what they're taught. A little story, and I want to ask Lakshmi about this, is when I was on the school board, I had a very strong supporter of mine, an African-American supporter, and he called me up and he said, "What are we going to do about all these Indians?" And I go, "What?" He goes, "Yeah.
I can't.
I couldn't believe it." So I go, and you know what? It's prevalent from the whites as well. So I'm not, I talked about this person because it happens to be someone that I know very well, and he felt comfortable enough to me with me to say what, and I said to him, I said, "What are you talking about?" He goes, "They're taking over our schools in Frisco. What's going on?" And I said to him, I don't want to mention his name, so I'll just call him Chris, even though his name's not Chris. So I said, "Chris, what are you talking about?" He goes, "It's not right, Steve. We, the whites and the blacks, have to stick together on this. They're not incorporating themselves." Lakshmi, you know me, right?
Oh, yes.
All right. I was in shock. I was literally in shock looking at the phone going, like, are you kidding me? So tell us, because the Indian community has grown so much, especially in North Texas. Tell us what, you know, you've experienced, your background with this.
Okay. So just going way back, I was born in this country and grew up in Mississippi.
Oh, wow.
In Jackson, Mississippi, in the 1970s. So,
I
know. I'm over here still working, and it just came into my head. She said Jackson, Mississippi.
Wasn't that movie The Help, right? The Help wasn't filmed in Jackson.
But, you know, the thing is, and this is what I think is changing. When I was growing up, any type of discrimination or any feeling was hidden. It was not out in the open, at least towards the Indian population. I understand that's not true when it comes to other races and religions, but for the Indian and Hindu population, it was a very subtle type of racism that you almost wouldn't notice if you weren't paying attention. And even now today, I feel like that is still true. But I have to tell you, I worked with somebody who is in the city of Frisco and pretty active in the city of Frisco in a group environment for about 6 months. 6 months, okay? Saw this person every week for 6 months. And at the end of that group project, let's call it, we all went out to dinner. And at that dinner, he said, "You know, things were going so well in Frisco till your people got here."
Ooh.
Ouch. And I thought he was
kidding. Should we be laughing at that? That's not really funny at all.
And
that really makes me angry.
It was uncomfortable laughter. It was like appalled.
Absolutely. Yeah. But thank you.
I find it humorous to think that anybody would, I mean, humorous is the wrong word, that anybody would think like that. And I was really surprised because, like I said, racism towards Indian or Hindu population is very subtle. It's not so outspoken. I thought he was kidding. I really thought that this was a joke, not a good one, but I thought it was a joke. So I sort of just giggled a little bit and waited to see what he would say. Maybe, "Oh, I'm sorry, I was just kidding," or something. Nothing. The only thing that followed up with that is, "I mean, you've brought good things too." That's the only
thing. Well, yeah, I think that's what people need to appreciate, especially from where I come from in my history. My perspective, even though I'm not supposed to put it in the show, is that America to me is like a large salad bowl, right? And if it only had lettuce in it, it would be a pretty boring salad. But if you add the cucumbers and the tomatoes and the chickpeas and all these great things that other cultures bring into the salad bowl, then it's a really nice tasting salad. And we need to understand and appreciate the differences in culture and how they really help make America great the way it is. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But I want to bring Sharace in. Sharace actually works for the ADL. And you're involved with...
Wait, what's the ADL for our audience?
Anti-Defamation League. And I think you're involved with this on a daily basis. That's why you're such a great guest to have today. So give us a perspective in the North Texas area of racism and what's going on as far as from your perspective.
Thank you, Steve, and thank you all for having me. I do work for the Anti-Defamation League. I run all of our education programs, which are, we have a number of different school-based programs. And I do interact with racism on a daily basis. Our office, we are the only North Texas office. All of our area covers North Texas and all the way to as deep as West Texas, almost to El Paso and all of Oklahoma. So we receive calls from all over this area about infringement on people's rights and dealing with racism, religious racism, gender. A lot of it is anti-Semitic because we're the ADL. I also work, do volunteer work with the NAACP in Collin County. And so we oftentimes get similar calls dealing with the African-American community. But both of those organizations receive calls from other demographics. And on a daily basis, I hear terrible stories like yours. Yours may, you laughed it off, but that's considered, it's called a microaggression. Mm-hmm. And it's ignorant, but that happens all the time. And there has been a 96% increase in hate crimes on the K-12 level in the last 3 years, and they increase year over year over year. A lot of that is connected to, there are studies now that connect that behavior to the political climate that we live in. And so that is the reality that we live in. There are 12 active white supremacist groups here in North Texas.
Ooh,
just in North Texas. They are active. They are doing things. They are recruiting. They are having meetings. They are active here in North Texas. So if you are not aware of these situations, if you are shielded from those, understand that there's a certain amount of, you sit in a certain amount of privilege. And Frisco may be shielded from that, but understand that it's a reality for a lot of people. And so this topic is very relevant. It is important that we have these conversations, that we do the hard work, that we intellectually challenge ourselves to have these conversations and really not boil it down to just a tweet or a bumper sticker.
Right.
That no one is, that no, this issue is too complicated and too complex, and we are too complex to just boil it down.
I think Laxmi wants to.
Yeah, please jump
in. You mentioned political climate, and I just have to say this. Although I said, you know, in the past it mm-hmm. has been more subtle sort of aggression. Mm-hmm. I just feel like in today's political climate, it's becoming okay to be openly hateful.
It is.
And that is something
Can I ask y'all something?
Sure.
Are we not happier when we know these folks' hearts as opposed to them hiding them?
Yeah, go ahead,
Eric. I wanted to jump in on that. Yeah, because, so, I mean, my interesting, you know, I'm from the South, from Birmingham, Alabama, and have a family, rich family history that I'm proud of, my family being involved in the civil rights movement. Most of you guys have heard of 16th Street Baptist Church. Mm-hmm. My parents missed the bombing by a few minutes.
Oh, wow.
And two of the girls died in my mom's Sunday school class. My cousin was injured in it.
Oh, wow.
So I grew up in a place where I saw a lot of overt racism. And then I moved to Texas. I've born and raised here in North Texas. Of course, yeah. The thing is, the white supremacist groups that are here, that's not new at all. I mean, no, I grew up here. I've been here since 90, and they've always been here. But I grew up in North Texas. I grew up in Sherman, Texas, so I know they existed. But I think that for me, one of the things that always made me feel comfortable, especially once I had that little brief stay over in New Mexico to get to Texas, I'd say in New Mexico, it's a lot of, strangely enough, a lot of transplants from New York and California. I couldn't tell as much. I knew who was racist, but they were trying to be friends. I was completely fine with the people who were open with it, because like I know where I stand, right? Even when I was in the military, I know where I stand. Like,
you
don't like me, I don't like you.
Yeah, thank you.
Depending on whatever it is. But if it's a racist thing, like, okay, at some point this is going to have to change because we all have to have the same mission, right? But at least I know. I don't need you pretending that you're my friend. I'm more comfortable with that because I know who you are and I know your heart. It doesn't make it right, but at least I kind of, you know, I've got good footing. But when you talk, you know, when you think about, like, now to me, you know, I look at this, I don't think it's, honestly, I think that, I don't even look at the political climate. I think really since the advent of social media, that's been the biggest change that I've seen. People can hide behind their keyboards and say whatever they want to say without any fear of consequences. And, I mean, I've noticed this since about the time I got on in 2008, I got on late because I fought it for a while. But I started noticing, I'm like, I can't believe people are saying this. And then the progression there for 2008, 2009, 2010, when Facebook was still censoring things and saying, hey, you can't put that up. They were even censoring profanity. And then they let it go. And I'm like, this is insane. So
it's like the Wild Wild West.
And I appreciate you making that point, that distinction, Eric. And I'm sorry, did I just...
No, you're good. Go ahead.
Get it, girl.
I think that social media does shine a light on the ugliness that has existed. You make a great point that overt racism and kind of quiet racism have existed in this country. I, too, am a Southern girl. I grew up in Texas. I spent time in a number of other states, but... I grew up here, and I'm a African-American woman. I'm a Gen Xer, listening to your yeah. age. And so and I'm a lover of history. And so I know my history and my culture. And I have lived with racism all of my life. And I know my community has always lived with racism. And so this is a reality for us, whether you're in Texas or Alabama or in New York. We sometimes people think that, oh, because it's New York or L.A., there's not racism. Racism is an institution, and it is ingrained in our culture.
Grace was talking about it that is. Before the
yeah,
show.
Yeah, I'd like to get, go ahead, Charisse, yeah. but I'd like no, to no, get no. Grace so involved
I was just
well.
Going to say that it is an institution, and I think that we do a disservice that it makes it difficult for marginalized communities when the conversation goes into individualism. We talked about individual racist acts. Racism is not an individual act. It is a system. And so, you know, whether it is happening to African-American people, the LGBT community, the Hindu community, it is happening. And it's institutionalized, and it's sometimes quiet by removing the names out of history books and removing certain images. And sometimes it's extremely overt when you get pulled over or, you know, you're profiled. And I'm the mother of a black son. And so I have a very unique experience with racism and dealing with him and racism.
And that's why I appreciate everybody coming in, because I am white. I mean, I am what I am. And it's just so funny to me that, you know, it's hard as a white person sometimes to really see what other groups are going through. And I do empathize with, I am Jewish as well. So I do, you know, occasionally get some of those comments that other people do. But it's just amazing to me that we're all human beings and that people would treat people differently just by the color of their skin or the religious or whatever they look like. You know, you go back, you know, basic discrimination of people, you know, of, you know, homosexuals. And it's just people just realize that we're all human beings. We're allowed to have differences. That's why if you're God-fearing, you believe that God's made us in his image. So his image is everybody. We're all just a melting pot of God. So, you know, you take away our skin color, we all bleed the same color, we all have the same organs, people. So understand that. And you know, as a white person hearing about this, it's kind of hard. You know, we hear the white privilege too, and I feel so bad because, you know, I guess I do have that, and I don't realize that I have mm-hmm. that advantage. A good friend of mine, my best friend, is Latino. And anyway, you met Jorge.
Oh, yeah.
And he tells me, you know, his perspectives all the time and, you know, how hard it is sometimes for him to achieve. And we're going to talk about that in the second part of the show about where we're going as a country and racism. But Grace, I know that you wanted to say something. Go ahead, Grace.
Sure. Yeah. So just a little bit of background on me.
Sorry.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. So I came here as an immigrant at a very young age of 19, come mm-hmm. from China. And actually, what's really interesting is I came into a white family. Therefore, I have one feet firmly planted in one environment, another feet in, you know, I am just right in the middle of two very different communities. Mm. So I speak from that very unique perspective. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm taking all of the conversation in, and there's so many points I want to hit, but really... A couple points here is I take all of your each individual experiences, you know, very heartily. And for myself, it's just like, it could be just my personality. I'm pretty ignorant of how people are giving me that subtle messages sometimes. Mm. I just chuck it away because mm-hmm. coming from China, a communist China when I was growing up, I'm also a Gen Xer, where people were treating people not really with subtle racism. It's life and death sometimes mm. going through a cultural revolution back in the 1970s. So coming from that extreme background, coming here to the United States where we do have a very peaceful, if I may say so, environment. People are, generally speaking, polite to each other, gentle with each other. So for me, from coming from that stark contrast to this country, I felt, personally felt, I've been treated, you know, very respectfully. I have, in my workplace, you know, when I'm jumping into a workplace, not even speaking English very well back in my 20s, and then people just included me in their social settings and taking me out to eat and, you know, just make sure that I'm part of the team, and I truly appreciate that. So, but again, I hear you all saying about your experiences, and then in a, particularly when you said about institutional racism, I don't know if I need to, I'm going to disagree or agree, because I'm sure you, because you work for ADL and you come from a background with lots of data and lots of personal cases, and I only come from a completely different community. Sure. I don't really know firsthand. But, you know, can we talk about this a little bit more, where if we say, if we're saying about institutional racism, you know, what are the numbers that are backing it up? What are the rules and laws and principles, particularly at the, like, maybe at the state and local level? What are the laws out there that's you know, that's overt racism? I really would like to know from my perspective.
Sure.
And I think that's just, you know, fascinating. Sure. To me to hear that the institutional racism still exists. And then, you know,
got a new host on the show. Go ahead, Grace.
All right. So I'm here to learn.
Sure. Yeah. And thank you so much for that comment. I just took over the mic on answering the institutional racism since I brought it to the table. I'll try my best to answer it. This is a short show. You could do it just one show. Ooh, on institutional racism.
Oh my God.
Part two.
We'll give you 30 seconds.
Well, okay, so I'll take just a few seconds. And I appreciate you saying that that's not my experience, but I recognize that it can exist, because as coming from a marginalized community, it makes it just that more difficult when people bury their head in the sand and they deny your experience. And so I appreciate that. But institutional racism, for instance, it's in economics, it's in education, it's in housing, in a number of different areas. You can think, if you think of a genre, I probably can figure out a way where there's an institutionalism in it. And that is because you have to roll back the history of this country in so many different areas. Just a few days ago marked the 400th year anniversary of the first slaves that were brought to this country. And
that.
So 1619 is a very important date. And that is the history that this country has to, the ugly history that we have to talk about. And that chattel slavery, that demeaning of a group of people to build the economy of your country, that was a system. And you had to continue that in a number of different ways. And even though we have laws on the books, you have fair housing laws, you have desegregation laws, you have banking laws that are on the books that try to regulate this, on the ground, many times these are not practiced. And there are social norms that people agree upon. There's a social contract that people may agree upon, or by silently not saying anything, you are buying into, you're endorsing that perpetuate those systems. One example, redlining. Redlining started after segregation, when African Americans, actually it started even before that. It started after, in the early 20s. And so redlining was when bankers would not give African Americans loans to buy homes. They marked off certain areas of town where Black people, if you wanted to live, that's where you had to live, and you couldn't get a loan. And so building, oftentimes in this country, home ownership is a way to build wealth. And that was denied many, many African Americans. And that went on for a very long time. And so example of institutional
racism. I had read somewhere that that's also how the suburbs came about. Where
white flight, absolutely.
Yeah, that's it. I couldn't remember the term.
Yes,
white flight.
White flight.
White flight. Audience, go Google it.
And then you have the opposite.
When the white people left the cities to go to suburbs. Yeah.
Because of integration. And then now you have the opposite of that, which is gentrification.
Yep.
Because everybody wants to live in downtown. And now they want to... Well, a lot.
Me neither.
That's a generality, but many people want to move into the urban areas, and those areas were occupied a lot of times by African American and even Hispanic communities, Latino communities, and they're being pushed out. And they they come in and developer. We see it in Dallas. We have so many. It started in Harlem. And then it moved its way.
Oh, now Harlem's the place to be.
I know.
That's right. Bill Clinton has a nice place in Harlem.
Yeah, and it's happening all across the country. And there have been controversies even here in Dallas.
We want to get Ricardo in here, but go ahead.
You know what? A lot of it, and I will tell you from what I've observed, is that we are in our heads a lot. Okay? We don't allow our feelings to get into it. I feel like there is such a lack of empathy, and we do not allow ourselves to empathize with other people, because if we do, like I said earlier, we will cloud
it makes
our
us vulnerable
worldview.
Yeah,
and we can't do that. We can't confuse ourselves.
Yeah. Right.
Absolutely. And before we get to the break, I want to hear from Ricardo, who's been sitting here very patiently, letting everybody talk. Ricardo, give us a little bit about your background and your perspective on this topic.
Great. Well, good morning, everyone.
What a voice, right?
Yeah.
I tell you, I came to the U.S. in 89, very young, and my first job was picking strawberries on the fields. And I still have friends and family members that are still picking strawberries in the Florida fields. And ever since I got here, I learned that people think different here in the U.S. In Mexico, coming from Mexico, you really don't have room for racism or complaining
Second.
I mean, where I grew up, and let me tell you why.
Oh, we'll come back. I'm sorry, Ricardo. Yeah. I didn't mean to be rude.
Yeah, he finally gets on the
microphone.
I know,
I'm so sorry.
So where I grew up, not in the whole country, but where I grew up, the community was so small and low income that we didn't have room for looking at any different. Everybody was helping each other and the same. Right. So when I came to the U.S., then I learned, oh, it's different here. And then I opened my eyes to so many things. Right. At the end of the day, what I saw was that it's all optional, guys, because we can take it to heart. Like you were saying, we can take it and really make a huge thing about it, or we can really do what we're able to do. And I've just been blessed throughout my years to get close to people that have educated me and taught me different and showed me, and I've been willing to learn, because I could have taken it very aggressively throughout the years, whether it's employment or partnerships or businesses, anything I've done, I've experienced it. The way I've battled it, because I don't even call it fighting, it's like a challenge, right? The way I've battled the challenge is by expressing what I've learned, what my parents taught me, to try not to judge, always be grateful, and love everybody.
Everybody.
And when you think about that, it's huge. Now, a lot of times we say, well, yeah, but he, she said, did whatever. Well, now we're becoming the same kind, the same hating kind.
Ricardo.
And if we really want to do our part, I can't change anybody's perspective or point of view
or the way they
were raised, right? What I've learned, though, is I have friends that have told me after 6 months or a year, man, when I met you, I was just kind of not wanting to be around you because I just didn't like Mexicans. And I'm like, really? So then when they tell me why they didn't like Mexicans, check this out, guys, is because their parents told them.
Exactly.
Or because their grandparents told them, or because their uncles told them, or because whoever they grew up told them, and the community they lived around. The community I come from was nothing but supporting each other in love, and that's what's in my blood. So obviously, as we grow up and you live around now Frisco, you see so many things. But if I always take it back to basics and say, you know what, you're entitled to your opinion, I still love you, how can you love me if I hate you? I don't know. That's the way I was raised, because I'm not going to let your hate get into my brain, into my heart. I don't have room for that. So if we can do our part, is keep loving.
Yeah.
Because no matter what, people eventually will tweak their way of thinking. How can I hate this person so much if this person is only loving me back?
Yeah.
But you got to be genuine about it. You can't fake
genuine.
It. You got to be genuine love. And it's hard to do. But I tell you what, guys, it's hard to live in this society anyway. So if it's hard anyway, why not?
I just want to jump in to explain why I had responded the way when you said that.
Yeah, why did you respond that way?
Because, okay, so this is a fun story.
How long was
that? My husband, okay, I'll be quick. Good. My husband is Hispanic. And we love Mexico. Quite honestly, for a lot of the features that you said, the people there, they're just focused. They're just doing their job. They're being with their family. They're just being, which I love. But my husband does not speak Spanish. And so it is a family joke now. When we land in Mexico, I'm not kidding, we set a timer to see how long it takes for someone there to make fun of him for not being able, and quite honestly, being ugly because he can't speak Spanish. It's a very big deal. Yeah, it is a very big deal if you're of that culture and you don't speak the language. Mm-hmm. Like, okay. My husband has any control. I mean, he could go back and learn it, and he knows a lot more than he, but he's not comfortable speaking.
You should give him a hard time every day for that until he learns it.
No, we need to give, well, no, because my mother-in-law's watching.
Can I respond to that just a
second?
Yeah,
absolutely. Because
we all have, each of our communities, we all have our things that we do.
Yes.
And sometimes it's good fun and sometimes it's over the top, right?
Right.
I mean, definitely in the Black community, we definitely have that, depending on what it is. I mean, there's certain things that if you don't know, I'm going to be like, you seriously don't know about that? Be like, come on, man. You should definitely know your history, know this, know that. Then there's some things that are over the top, right? Because we have these ideas that there's certain ways people should act just because of their skin color, which drives me insane, so I won't go off on that tangent. But I think that it's part of that, going back to what you're saying, it's just treating everybody as humans equally. So this is why I always balk at the idea of truly institutionalized racism. One, because we've come so far, but also because the idea, like, racism exists, we know it exists, but it's taught, right? Mm-hmm. It's taught.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's taught by
education.
Parents, it's taught by
it's
communities.
Education.
It's taught largely to the point of where that's the only reason people think these things like redlining were okay, because they were taught that these people were less than you, right? So one of the reasons I have an issue now is I think whenever we speak in that term of saying, like, okay, this is part of society, this is what it is, we're accepting to a point instead of just changing it, right? Because you can fight it from one perspective of, well, we've just got to work this hard and work twice as hard. And maybe, you know, at the time, like, my dad was coming up, because even though, like, the whole Xer thing, yeah, I'm a late one, but I'm an Xer. But I remember hearing my dad tell me stories, you know, being in Birmingham at Vulcan Materials, and, you know, one of the main reasons he was able to be at the level he was is because, you know, back then computers were the size of this room and nobody else could work them. Well, you know what? He took that opportunity and he moved up and he brought up people behind him. And then we have to continue to do that and change society and be there, like you said, to change those opinions. I think of one guy I served with, he was pretty openly racist. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. We're both green, right? We're about to go to a country where people are going to try to kill us.
Gotta watch your back.
At the end of the day,
right?
We got to go work together. I laugh, completely laugh at this point, because a few years ago, we reconnected on Facebook. Yeah, he's the exact opposite of what he was there, and he's married to a beautiful Black woman, has two beautiful kids. And, but those experiences, right? I didn't meet him with hate.
Eric,
I
jump in and say something
real
quick?
Well, no, we actually
okay.
have to take a hard okay. break here. So I appreciate everybody's comments. And when we get back, I want us to think about, you know, where are we going from here? I mean, we've all experience in one way or another some discrimination, and we understand the history of Charissa. I think she should have her own show, by the way. We should really look forward. Some of these comments that Eric and Ricardo said, I think we should use those and say, okay, where do we go from here as a country? Obviously, we're not going to sit here and go, poor, pitiful me. And I just want to know, for a listening audience to know,
excuse me, wow,
bad timing, but I want you to know that this group here is not all Democrats or all Republicans. We're actually a mix of conservatives and liberals.
I don't speak party.
Right. So I just thought anybody that's commenting, oh, look at this, you know, boohoo, we got the liberals in the room.
Can't do it.
We're
anymore.
Not all liberals, okay? And we are talking
Can
real
we just
about
not politicize
racism. Exactly.
Everything, please.
Yeah.
So on that note, if everybody just take a breath, we're going to get recognition to our sponsors. Our premier sponsor is Elevated Roofing. Ricardo, do you work for Elevated Roofing?
Yes, sir. I'm part of Elevated Roofing.
So Ricardo, one of our great guests here, works for Elevated Roofing. And I have to tell you, you know, you can really judge a company by the way they actually, their attire, their vehicles, their just the way they act. And Elevated Roofing, I have my personal experience. That's how I met Ricardo. Their trucks come and they're just Do you have to clean your trucks like every week, Ricardo? Is that like part of the deal? Like every crew has to clean their trucks?
Part of the excellence. Part of the excellence.
Right. So they provide excellence for everything that they do as a company. So if you ever need a roofing contractor, I mean, they're the largest in North Texas. And they not only do the roof, but they do your vents, your gutters, the painting. In fact, Ricardo's in charge. He's one of the head mucky mucks in the company. He runs Elevated Painting. We've got a big shot here, yeah. So he knows, and I have to say, Elevated Roofing, they're true to their word, and everything they say is just trying to take care of the customer. So to our listening audience, if you ever need a roof or painting, anything that wants to be done, that has to be done professionally, you want Elevated Roofing, and you can get a hold of them at 469-200-0582. That's 469-200-0582. We do have some other sponsors we need to recognize. Porsche Plano has been one of our sponsors since day one. I know everybody in this room has one or two Porsches, and I want to thank them for supporting our sponsor. Great vehicles. I know that, Eric, you have a Harley, right?
Yep.
So I know you want to go from Harley, which is a really good bike, to, you know, a Porsche. I think, you know,
I've never seen a two-wheel Porsche, though, so I don't know.
Well, I think they'll come out with one, especially if you get the input in there, because they are coming out with their electric vehicle, the Taycan.
Strangely enough, the V-Rod, when it was first designed, is a Porsche motor.
Really? Yeah. Oh, see? My. So Porsche, they're involved with Eric's life right now. But
I'll just take yours, Steve.
Ricardo has borrowed my car. Did you like it, Ricardo?
I loved it.
I have to
Porsche is the way to go.
Thank you, Ricardo. I appreciate that. From one sponsor to the other, how do you like that? Send it off. So Porsche Plano on Plano Parkway. Oh, there's a nice billboard there. The great, great crew. We got big John Griggs over there. If you need a car, he's great. Their service, Nikki Curtwright, great people. We also want to introduce a new sponsor. I'll give a bell for that.
I love this.
You going to talk about Bell and Sparrow, or am I? Bell and Sparrow, what a unique group they are. It's a woman-organized group, and they take care of women that are in need, basically, if they need jobs or they've been abused by their spouse or they just need help. And they use, they're actually a religious group as well, from what I understand. So they treat...
Huge advocates for women.
They're on a mission to bring the message of the gospel and instill worthiness to all women around the world. So women who need to hear they are loved, seen, and worthy. That's basically what they stand for. And they do everything from teaching skills to providing encouragement as they struggle through even incarceration, to help them overcome sex trafficking. So anything that these women have been abused to,
they have come
a lot of events. So please check out Bell and Sparrows. Really cool, really cool organization. And I think it's bellandsparrows.com. And that's B-E-L-L-E and Sparrows.
They'll be on our Facebook page.
Yes, they will. They have a slogan, beautiful, not forgotten. And it's a really great organization. Please, who's ever listening, if you want to help a charity local here in North Texas, that's a good one to help. And lastly, getbloomly.com. If you're looking for a florist that will hand create your personalized floral arrangements. You want one, Grace? Okay, go to getbloomly.com. We'll give you the information. They actually have what's pretty unique, prescription service. So if you want to bring flowers, say every 2 weeks to your home, and they bring the vase and everything, and they'll actually talk to you, customize it.
Oh, that is neat.
They come right there. He's a local entrepreneur here in North Texas. GetBloomly.com. They just signed, I hope I don't ruin it for him, but they just got an agreement with a very prominent store. I wonder if I could say this.
No,
store.
Don't say it. If you don't know, then pass.
Yeah,
we have next week.
They're going to be doing their weekly floral arrangements. They had some other competitor they were using. He came in there, showed him his designs. They went, "We want you." He got the order. He actually picks the stems himself. So getbloomly.com. And we lost one of our guests, but she'll be back. So I just want to say a couple notes before we talk about going forward. This is from the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. And I really want to get off the part that, you know, we obviously know there's discrimination. We all talked about it. But just to give the clear facts before we move forward. So nearly half, 45% of African Americans experience racial discrimination when they try to rent an apartment or buy a home. 18% of Asian Americans say they have experienced discrimination when interacting with police. Indian Americans are much more likely than Chinese Americans to report unfair police stops or treatment. Nearly one in five Latinos have avoided medical care due to concern of being discriminated. 34% of LGBTQ Americans say that they have a friend or have been verbally harassed when using the restroom. And 41% of women report being discriminated against in equal pay and promotion opportunities. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, coming from my perspective, I have to say when I was a kid, where I lived in my bubble on Long Island, I maybe saw one or two black kids in my whole, like, growing up. I never saw an Indian. I did see some Asian Americans. I did see some Muslim Americans. But for the most part, my community was Italian and Irish and Jews. My best friends were Italians and Irish. I had no idea of really what was out there until I went to college, went to University of Michigan, started to see how diverse the world was and how great it was. I actually was one of those people that dove into the different cultures to see what was out there and was amazed at how great people were as people. So I have to say, in fact, the world is changing. If you see the Chicago Reporter says by 2050, minorities will be over 50% of the U.S. population. And right now, as we speak, the ethnic minority children are the majority in the U.S. as of 2019. So I just want to give those facts out because the world is changing and we need to accept all types of people because we all are in it together. So at the end of the day, if we want to make America great, I hate to use that phrase, I'm not trying to get politics political here, then we all need to work together and forget about our skin color or sexual orientation or religion and realize that the only way this country is going to succeed is we work together. So I'd like to get everybody's perspective on, you know, where you think the country is now. Are we improving? Is it getting better? What do you see? Eric, I'll let you start since you're looking at the mic, and then we'll go around the table right around so everybody gets a shot. So Sharice won't take over the whole show. Just kidding, Sharice.
Okay.
So I will say I feel extremely just blessed, to be honest with you, that being able to spend time with my great-grandparents, my grandparents, and my parents and see their stories, see what they went through. And then, you know, growing up in Alabama in the 80s, and I was kind of like you, actually. Before I moved to Texas, we had black and white families. We had one white family in our neighborhood, and I was around other black kids, other white kids, and I hadn't really met anybody else until I moved to Texas. So it was really weird to jump in, and then, of course, meeting other people, and people were people, so it didn't, I love that experience. But I look at the things that my grandparents went through during the Civil Rights Movement. I mean, again, I go back to the church bombing. I go back to my, you know, them being threatened at their home. My dad getting pulled over, driving through Alabama. He was a minister. So CME, they move you around churches. So you don't necessarily have the church next to your house that you work at. And I think about some of the things that were said to me. I remember having a person say this to me. And ironically enough, it wasn't a white person. Told me I didn't belong there whenever I went to sit down on the bus when I was in high school in Sherman. And it was strange, especially because I was like, hold on, you're a minority like me. What's wrong with you? What are you thinking, man? But I also think of the opportunities that I have that they didn't have. You know, my grandmother graduated Tuskegee and went to Alabama at a time that was really weird to be, you know, hard for somebody like her to be at Alabama working on her master's. I chose to start out at an HBCU, Historically Black College University, went to the Army, came back, and went to UT Dallas, where just actually went through the diversity training there. The top three categories are almost even. White, international, and then...
So where do you see us now?
I think vastly improved, right? We got a long way to go. But we have a long way to go. But we are so far better off than we were 50 years ago. And it's that phrase, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time, right? I think we have this McDonald's fast food society view of the world that we expect to be from here to here overnight. Like you just pointed out, 400 years of slavery, 1865 to 1965, right to vote, but not able to exercise that right to vote, right? Voting Rights Act passed, we started, we go through desegregation. It hasn't been that long since we've been making these adjustments, and I think we've come a long way. We've got a long way to go. We need to keep fighting every day, but we need to understand that this is not going to happen overnight, especially when there are people who are still taught racism.
Sadaf, why don't you add into that?
Okay. So, you know, as Ricardo said, we definitely have the power to change hearts and minds, right?
And that's what's really great about this country, that we have this opportunity. I wanted to mention that before. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but in most countries, like, you know, Grace was talking about communist China, you know, you're stuck in your spot and that's it. At least in America, if we are discriminated or talk to a certain way, we have that ability to free speech. But go ahead.
Yeah. And so, Steve, I was like you. I had one colored person in my high school. I go off to college and I'm like, this is great. I mean, we have people from everywhere and I embraced it. But I'm also well traveled. And so I've learned to embrace different cultures and take the good from the different cultures. That's how I want to raise my children. Yes, I didn't feel the brunt of racism. And I, you know, and maybe I'm being a little dramatic. It's not blunt. I just feel like now people can give you their feedback, you know, such as a few months ago. Oh, wow, you're really American. And I'm like, I was born and raised here. I am American, you know. So it is changing their hearts and minds. Now, when my daughters say, Mama, why don't they like us? It's heartbreaking.
Sure,
you know.
Absolutely.
But yes, I mean, what Eric said, if you look at the history of this country, if you look at what Sharissa said, the history of this country from the Native American to the African American to everyone. I had I have an African American friend who said to me, listen, learn from our community. It was us then. Now it's you. And when he said that, I was like, wow. So this is just the history of this country, unfortunately. But yes, it is getting better. It's just, we just have to work hard and we have to work together.
I agree. Lakshmi, go ahead.
So, you know, nothing in life is constant and nothing in this country is constant. Everything is a journey and an ebb and flow. So we've come a long way. We have a long way to go still, but I think we're getting there. Leading by example, living a life of example is important. The other thing that I wish, you know, everybody listening and everybody out there would realize is that we have certain prejudices and misconceptions about each other. Accepting that and accepting the fact that you may not be right in your misconception and your understanding may be a misunderstanding is really important, because then if you can clear your mind and start to just accept people for who they are, I think the change will happen more quickly. I know that's a lot to ask, but that would be a great start. So,
and Grace?
So I hate to be the realist or the pessimist in here, because I think, you know, when we're talking about subtle racism, we're talking about prejudices, we're all, you know, in society at large, right? We're all human beings. And I know we're getting there. We definitely are better, right? Speaking, Mr. You know, Eric has said about our progressions, you know, coming from a Chinese American perspective, you know, if we're talking about Japanese encampment or even the Chinese Exclusion Act back in the 1800s, well, we came a long way. But when we're talking about, you know, individual cases, when talking about our society at large, we are making progress. At the same time, I have that little reservation in my heart. And I agree with everyone saying, you know, be that person of love, be that person of acceptance and open-mindedness. Absolutely. However, just the pessimist, side of myself, just saying is, what is going to be our expectation? How are we going to teach our children to be resilient against those type of racism, again, you know, at the personal level? So because I really not say that because it's just a personal thing, which I am dealing with my daughter now about this resilience, is that, you know, in high school, I'm bringing back to education, right? We have a zero bully policy at FISD. But my daughter tells me that in the halls and in, you know, private settings, there will be comments made. And, you know, like, you know, it could be just very snide comment from one person, but the other person just received it so hard. This is coming from what you posted on Facebook the other day about being kind and stuff, you know, and that just made me thinking hard. And it's like, you know, we have to accept the reality as well sometimes. Not accept it. We have to fight it. But we have to teach our children to fight it with heart and soul. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's where I am, you know, where I am right now.
Okay. Sharissa, would you like to add to that?
I would. And thank you for everyone's comments. I think that they just really add and enrich this discussion. You said something, Steve, earlier when you said something about forget about skin color. And I wanted to address that in my last comments to say that people, marginalized communities want you to see their skin color because it comes with a certain level of experience. And it means that you recognize who I am and my experience. It doesn't mean you don't have to endorse it, but you recognize who and what I am. And so that's important. I would say that to the dominant culture, refrain from saying that and try to look at it in the mode of I accept you regardless of your background.
Well, that's essentially what I was saying. Okay. I don't look at skin color because I look at us all as human beings. So,
and I think ultimately, don't we all have pain in our lives? I mean, I'm the original poor girl. I don't. Nobody would know that. Well,
yeah.
And so, and how I, do and I? I
and
how
I'm
do
not
I?
Trying to delineate that from pain. I'm saying that
she's
that,
picking on the host.
No. I'm not picking on the host. I'm calling out something that happens frequently. No,
yeah, that I get what you're
people
saying.
People say that they don't see color, and that to me is. That can be interpreted.
That, absolutely.
Right, and
that's
that could be hurtful.
Whole, all lives matter.
Yes,
black
and so
lives matter,
you know,
right.
tread lightly in that. But I would say that, not to necessarily plug my organization, but one of the things that we talk about, that we teach about, that bias is universal. That we all have biases, and so when we accept that and understand that, you can't remove bias, but you can mitigate it, and you can educate yourself on how to deal with bias. And so we do that. And to your point, Grace, about what we teach our children, yes, we do need to act out of love. We do need to educate ourselves. We do. And that's how we have better interactions is to quelling that fear by educating ourselves and removing those things that we've been taught. But as we teach our children, we do need to teach them how to deal with that because it can be very traumatic on and it can impact your self-esteem, their ability to do work. And so it's important to teach those allies.
Ricardo, what do you tell your children? Like, how, you know, in your perspective, that's a great point that you're raising. I'd like to touch on that. So what, getting you involved again. So what do you tell your children about the possible discrimination against them and how they should handle it?
They've seen it firsthand. And at the end of the day, at the beginning, they don't know why. But when you explain, it's just because people don't know. Simple. People don't know. And I tell you, personal experience, my parents taught me a lot of principles, a lot of great things. My parents were pastors for 30 years, so I learned a lot of good stuff, but they never taught me business. And growing up, our belief was, if you're rich, if you got a lot of money, it's bad. So growing up, I was thinking, it's okay to be poor. It's okay to not have anything because you're happy and you got God and you're great. I come to the U.S. and I see the opportunity and I'm like, it's not okay to be poor. Then I start hanging out with people that teach me the business and teach me the principles of the money and what to do and how to do it. And I'm thinking, it's great to be rich because the more you have, the more you can help. So it's just kind of what you do with the education. Mm-hmm. And I just love what you're doing because you're educating people mm-hmm. on the whole thing. So going back to what we live in right now with social media, with the communication channels and everything that we have now, I think that what it used to take 400 years, now it takes 10 years. Yeah. What it used to take 10 years, now it takes a year. What it used to take a year, now it takes a month, and so on and so forth, because communication. Yes. So I go back to what we can do is teaching our children that we're all the same. And I remember this very vividly because we were in an event one time in Kansas City, and another friend of my son, the little one, said, this black person, whatever. And my little kid looked at him and then saw the African-American person. And he just kind of looked at him up and down. And he realized at that time in his life that that person was black.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. He never knew that the color of your skin makes you different. Mm-hmm. And then I saw his face and his eyes and he was looking up and down. He was like 6. And then he kind of looked at me. And I'm like, we're all good. We're all the same. And then he looked at the other little guy, and he was just like, no, but this guy's black. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's just what you put in their brain and how they grow up. But at the end of the day, if we keep doing our part and use the social media and the communications and the interaction with other people mm-hmm. to truly show that we're not going anywhere. We're just going to keep growing. And the more education, the more information we give, and the more love we share, the better it's going to be. I mean, it's hard,
but
everything is hard anyway.
I have a question from the panel, and I don't know if we'll get it in it from 5 minutes. What do we think about reverse discrimination? Because I've experienced that.
Yeah.
I'm sure everybody
I have a unique situation with that.
I mean, I lived in an all-white town, but I went to a predominantly black junior college, and trust me, it was regularly, like, all the time. So what do we think about that? Is that a problem?
Go ahead,
are we going to...
I'll jump in on this one because I have a unique experience. But so this is one of those, and I used to hear it growing up, and it's one of those terms that I kind of say, at the end of the day, discrimination is discrimination. you can be a minority and you still be pretty racist and pretty prejudiced. Oh,
right.
So, but yeah, so, and this kind of goes to, because I want to piggyback on something she said that was awesome.
I'm a Black American. Is part awesome.
Of what, it's oh, thank
part you. Of what that is, like mature combination of your experiences, right? I'm a Black American. That informs who I am and my character, and I want you to see that. Being a military veteran informs it. I'll out myself. I'm a conservative. That informs my character. And I was one of those guys that about the time when I was probably 17, I didn't care about the skin color of the person I dated. And I was like, at that point, I dated mostly Black women. Well, I ended up being married. I've been married 14 years to a white woman. I've seen some interesting things. And ironically enough, where I've seen the most hurt, where I've had felt the most hurt, is from people who look like me. And it's been, and it just kills me because I'm like, okay, so the crazy country family I grew up in, the crazy country family I married into, fine with me. But then I run into people who look like me and they'll make comments and think like it's nothing, like, oh, you couldn't find a good Black woman to marry? Or, well, you know what, they'll be like, she really can't identify with your experiences. Like, well, half of them she can. She grew up in the country. You know, that's another way that people discriminate, that urban-rural divide. I've heard that so many times, like, well, you guys up there out in the country don't know anything. Like, come on. So we have these prejudices, and you see it happens often and often and oftentimes within your own race. Like you talked about them making fun of your husband because he doesn't speak Spanish. And it hurts, man, because at the end of the day, we got to start treating each other as individuals and not picking out little bitty things about our experiences that make us different.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, I've been critiqued for my headscarf amongst Muslims because they say, well, we're Muslim too. We don't cover.
Right.
And so
right.
I've been critiqued, like, why are you covering? And so, yeah, it happens in every community.
I think
so. Is that racism or is that discrimination?
There are intergroup. I mean, you're going to have intergroup dynamics. I mean, within each within communities, you have different prejudices.
Right.
And so, I mean, and that's just natural just because we're humans and our brains, the way our brains work, it tries to label things and critique, does this thing fit according to how I see things? And so that's kind of how we begin to develop those prejudices.
So recently.
Go ahead, Lakshmi.
Yeah,
Lakshmi.
But when you're talking about reverse discrimination, you're talking about,
perfect example is currently the phrase is 50-year-old white man. And mm-hmm. I had to defend and say, I will not look at a 50-year-old white man any differently until I know him. The same way I will not look at a hooded black man. Those phrases for me are parallel. Am I wrong in that? I mean, they are. We're supposed to be worried about the 50-year-old black man, a white man now. Well, is that not the same?
I'm not sure. I don't understand what you mean
Stereotype to a hooded black man per he's dangerous. Stereotype audience, not me. Hello.
I've heard that actually before. I know what you're talking about. It's like, I assume you're racist because you're a 50-year-old white man. You come from that culture. Yeah. I assume you're dangerous because you're black man.
It's very popular lately. Is that not a parallel?
Sherry, but I see something there. Like, me being Mexican, I have a lot of people that say, yeah, you guys love tacos and soccer. and one thing that I would tell everybody is if you're really for it to change this around, we got to go and grow a little thicker skin.
Yes.
Like Grace was saying, because you can't be a victim and try to fight for somebody's rights. You got to be strong and grow some thick skin, because when people tell me you like tacos and soccer and tequila, I'm like, you know, a lot of my friends do. I love tacos. I really don't care for soccer, you know.
Like everybody loves tacos.
But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but the issue
it's
is
just how you take it.
It is. We do have to develop a thicker skin, but I think also you know, there's a time when black people will actually go out in public and not order chicken because there's this stereotype that black people
oh
love chicken. That's real for people, right? And so I love chicken. Like, there's nothing wrong with that, embracing those. But this issue with the stereotype is when you marginalize those people just to that stereotype.
And we're going to leave it right there. Thank you so much for this panel. I mean, we could actually go on for another hour.
I agree. It's when you marginalize.
I think we're going to have everybody back if you could all come back.
Yeah, I hate doing that.
That's okay, Sharisa. But so thank you so much for coming, everybody. Really appreciate the hour. Really flew by. I only have 10 seconds. Our next show, just to give a preview, will be a recap of 13 shows. Everybody have a great day. Enjoy. Treat everybody with love. Take care. Bye now.